18, and the time is 3:34 p.m. Members present, Vice Chair Senator Dyson, Senator Michicki, and Senator French. Senators Faircloth and Bishop are called away to a Senate Finance Committee meeting, and I believe Senator McGuire will be along shortly. Today we're hearing from the governor's nominees for the Board of Fisheries and the Big Game Commercial Services Board. So we'll start out with the Board of Fisheries. So we should have Mr. Clubberton and Mr. Webster online. Okay, there's Mr. Clubberton. Excellent. So the first person we'll hear from them then is Mr. Tom Clubberton, online from the off-net. Mr. Clubberton, can you hear us?
Sure, I can hear you fine.
Great. If you would introduce yourself, please, and then just give us a little summary of your background and why you're interested in the Board of Fishery.
Sure, I'll try and keep it short. I came to Alaska in 1984, worked in Juneau for close to 10 years with the state. Last position there was Director of Information Systems for the state, DOT. After that, I moved to Talkeetna in 1993, where I began restoring an old National Historic Register fishing and hunting lodge outside of Talkeetna, 12 miles. That my family and I have run as a small inn slash bed and breakfast for the last 10 years. While we were running the inn, once we got past the construction phase, which took quite a while, I had some spare time in the winters, so I became involved in the community council. That led to the Matsu Planning Commission. That led to the Matsu Borough Assembly, where I served 3 years as an assembly member. And while I was a member of the Matsu Assembly, Kurt Menard was our mayor, and Kurt had told some folks that he was willing to, at their request, reintroduce the mayor's Blue Ribbon Sportsman's Committee. And Kurt, as you may know, was not well at the time. He'd been having a bout with cancer, and so I asked Kurt what might I do for him to help him with the things he wanted to get done as mayor, and he said, well, would you get this Sportsman's Committee going? And I said, well, what do they want to do? And he says, I don't know, something about fish. So he gave me a list of names, and I organized a group of folks. And among those individuals who were interested in the sustainability of fish in the Matsu area was a gentleman by the name of Larry Engel, E-N-G-E-L. And Larry turns out to have been a very renowned member of the Board of Fish. He'd served 3 terms. One term he was chairman, and prior to that he had been a biologist with the Department of Fish and Game in South Central Alaska for a 20-year career with the Department of Fish and Game. So I was educated for 3 years, about a good long 3 or 4 hour meeting a month for 3 years with members of the Sportsman's Committee and Mr. Engel, and through that process I learned a lot about, in particular, Alaska's sustainable salmon fisheries policy. Our group with Larry in the lead was quite effective in 2008 in encouraging the board to grant stock of concern status to Susitna and Yentna sockeye salmon on a yield basis. And through that process, I worked very closely with Denby Lloyd, who was the commissioner at Fish and Game. Cora Campbell was the governor's special assistant at that point in time. And I, being the assembly guy, was the de facto chairman of that Sportsman's Committee. So as we stepped toward asking for the stock of concern status, I tried to work as closely as I could with the department so I wouldn't blindside those folks with any, you know, anything that might not have been factual or something they might have not appreciated. So I found myself working closely with those guys, sending them drafts and making sure that they were informed on what our group was doing. So eventually when my assembly term ended, I was encouraged to throw my name in the hat for the Board of Fisheries, and did so and ended up on the Board of Fisheries 3 years ago, and have had a great opportunity from that point on to expand the knowledge I'd gained from working those years with Larry Engel and the guys on that committee, and had a lot to learn. By the time you work a full 3 years on the board, you've been through every fishery in the state, every stream, every water body within the landmass and all the offshore fisheries, well, out to 3 mile fisheries. So early on, it became apparent to me that once you've received that education and made your way around, it was only right to try and extend that commitment to the state. And the second time around, you're so much better informed. You've made some changes. You've been around, seen what the board has done, watched the changes the board has made. And second time around, the fellow's just that much more familiar, more observant, more aware of what's been tried, what worked well, what may have not worked well. So struck me as the only right thing to do would be to try to help the state recoup its investment and giving me the education I got and staying on for another term. So back in December, I started hearing from a lot of folks, well, are you staying on? You're going to go again? And the best way to ensure that I was to turn my name into the governor for consideration, which I did. And so here I am, and any questions after that, I'm happy to answer.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Cleverton. Questions, committee members? Yes, Senator French.
Mr. Cleverton, I'm just coming in a little loud for you. Thanks so much for stepping forward to serve another term. My question is maybe you can just tell me which cases you think are the hardest to deal with and which cases are the easiest, or questions, I guess is more appropriate, questions that come before the commission.
Sure. Well, the most difficult are ones that don't have a real solid, clear answer in policy or conservation or sustainability. And I would say the toughest one I found to deal with was that of permit stacking for set netters. And that is a point where the board's asked to consider whether it's okay for one individual to hold two limited entry permits for set net fisheries. And the legislature gave the board the authority years back to allow permit stacking. And at the time the legislature did that, they offered up, well, the theory in large part was to reduce the amount of gear in a fishery and try to normalize an overcapitalized fishery. If you had more guys with permits fishing, then the catch or the value of the fish made economically feasible for that many folks to be fishing. In other words, there were more guys fishing than could practically make a livelihood or meet their expenses doing it. Gave us the ability to offer up, let one individual own two permits and try and get some gear out of the water. And it was mostly aimed, I believe, during the lean times in Bristol Bay at the drift net fishery. And so there were some stacking opportunities offered over the years, and in particular in Bristol Bay and other places, if you go, the drift fishermen who are out running around in their boats are offered, they can fish two permits, but they only get 1.5 times the amount of gear. And then eventually the desire to make the fisheries more economically viable began to occur to the set net fishermen, and we began seeing proposals asking to stack up set net permits. And that becomes a very lively discussion with, people, stakeholders who live in the areas, who live outside the area, folks who just realize that with more permits they can, make a better living at what they do. The most we heard out of that, I believe, the most pro side of that discussion came from folks who lived in the eastern side of Bristol Bay who run set net sites but were having a very difficult time with the amount of gear they could put in the water, making enough of a livelihood to make ends meet as prices go up in the east side of Bristol Bay. We lost the Air Force base at King Salmon, so the economy's been really hurting over there on that side. So Ugashik, Naknek, the eastern side fisheries, a lot of the locals were trying to get the opportunity to stack up permits. Well, meanwhile, the guys on the western side seemed to be moving along, but they somehow thought that stacking increased the value of permits, and if the values rose, then more individuals on the west side wouldn't have the wherewithal to buy another permit, so it would put the price of entering the fishery out of their reach. So that type of a question, it's really hard to find a clear, here's the best answer. You've got some very heartfelt needs among folks who are just trying to be able to keep themselves living in a rural community. The fishery is probably the best opportunity they've got to make some money in a year. It's a 5 or 6 week season, and a lot of folks feel maybe that's not, is that right to be able to make a whole year's living in that amount of time? But maybe it's not all the money you're going to make, but it might be enough to pay for the oil to heat your home over the years. So you're going to figure something else out to fill in. So that became a very, very difficult question. It was very contentious. We visited it a couple of times over the last 3 years, and you know, we've also visited the same question in other areas. We looked at it in Kodiak, where there was a lot of opposition to it. Cook Inlet was not much opposition. They were interested in it. It went well. Yakutat, it went well. Bristol Bay, it was just wildly contentious. And when we go back and look at, you know, the conversations that happened with the legislature when they passed a bill that gave us the authority to do that, there just wasn't any discussion about set netting. There was drifters and reducing gear and overcapitalized fisheries. So we end up as a board in a position where we've got a tough decision, but we've got no way to, you know, base that decision on anything but our own 2 cents worth at that point in time and whose argument sounds most appealing. And those are the tough ones where it's just on your shoulders and you don't get a lot of direction from, you know, statute or, you know, conservation's an easy one to understand. Those are the kinds of things where we hit certain things that just land on your shoulders, and you know, there's no other compass that tells you how you should make your decision.
That was a thoughtful and a nuanced answer. Thank you.
Further You're questions welcome. From committee members? Yes, Senator Machicki.
This is Senator Machicki. Quick question for you through the chair. How do you, so you talked about easy and difficult decisions, parts of the country where there's allocation issues, more demand sometimes than the fisheries can provide, you're in a tough spot. How do you sit back and make some of those decisions, or what sort of basic philosophy do you have on remaining fair on some of those toughest decisions in fisheries?
Yeah, well, I'm really lucky because I don't really personally have a dog in the fight. You know, my inn, we're a long ways from, you know, any live great fishing. In the day in the 40s when they opened my place, there were giant rainbow trout in Montana Creek, and there were probably king salmon there too. And now Talkeetna is more about zip line tours and river rafting and flight seeing and mountain climbing. So I got an education, but I never have really risen through the ranks, say as a fanatic fisherman or a, you know, sports guide or a commercial fisherman. So I've been really blessed with the ability to back off and try and watch and see what just strikes me as what is fair. And one of the great things about the Board of Fish process, if any of you have ever tried to sit through a Board of Fish meeting, they can go on forever. A Cook Inlet meeting will last 2 weeks. Probably the shortest meetings we ever have are 5 to 6 days. And we hear tremendous amounts of input from the public. We get public comments in advance. So to start with, anyone in the state can submit a proposal based on their perception of what's going on with a fishery, some particular issue that means something to them. Advisory committees can turn in proposals. So they'll come from anywhere, any place. But then anyone can also write in written comments prior to the meeting, and we get copies of those. Then during the meeting, we start out with 3 minutes per person for anyone that walks in the door and wants to speak to us. And then after everyone's had their say, which can go on for days, we'll break into committees based on groupings of proposals. So maybe we're looking at allocation between two user groups, and you know, all the proposals that deal with those allocations will come into a group, and our job then becomes hearing, we'll bring up each proposal and ask for the individuals in the room on the committee. We'll pare it down usually to 20 people plus or minus who have a very live interest in that discussion. And we get to then interview those guys, ask them questions. They get to discuss their perspectives. And as board members, the greatest opportunity we have is to take any kind of conflict on allocation and ask those user groups to work it out. Hey, you guys, you've been in this. What do you think's fair? What's the right answer? What do you think of this proposal? And if it seems to have good traction from both sides, if we're really lucky, they'll reach a compromise among themselves. And that's one of the things that I learned from Mr. Webster, who you speak to soon, that the most powerful thing we can do as board members is to ask for compromise among the stakeholders. And there's an old Board of Fish saying that you can use when they don't look like they're going to reach a compromise. You can say, look, guys, it's a tough question. You people know the answer better than anyone else in the room, because these guys have been coming to these meetings average of 20 years or 25 years. They know the fishery. And we'll say, look, you either compromise or you're going to leave it up to the seven dark angels at the front of the table here to make that decision. And then you don't know what's going to happen. So we really strive that direction. And then, you know, if they won't come to a compromise, then it's up to us. It lands on our shoulders to, you know, look at the biology, the economics, and frankly, you just have to put on your lie detector and try and figure out who's just wanting more because they're greedy and who's got a real problem and needs a different allocation. And those are the ones we grind through and, you know, as a board reach a decision. And they can be tough, but, you know, generally, you know, you will, by the end of that process, because you do hear so much information, you've got a really pretty good idea of what the situation is. A good example might be years ago down in the Southeast Finfish meeting. We had a suite of proposals that dealt with declaring a big chunk of area a sanctuary. And the more you listen to the whole thing, at first blush, it sounded like, oh my, this area really is in dire straits. They need to keep the fishermen out. These people portrayed this place as just being overfished and burned out. And then as you listen more, you found out there were a couple of people that lived down there. They were related to each other. They had summer homes nearby. And they just flat didn't like seeing the fishing boats out in front of their bay there. So they tried to get the board to turn it into a sanctuary, and then neither of them showed up. That was actually a pretty easy one, because you're like, well, that's BS, and you kind of let it go and turn it loose. And you know, if they get tougher, really, then you just have to turn on your best sense of economics, biology, and then do your best to figure out who's telling the truth and, you know, who's just trying to exercise a little greed, because there never was a fisherman who didn't want to catch more fish.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other further questions? All right. Well, we've got some folks signed up to testify, and some of them I know they want to speak to this appointee. Others I'll have to ask the question. The first person here in Mat-Su, Andrew Crouch. Can you hear us, Mr. Crouch?
Yes, I can. Should I go ahead?
Yes, please. Identify yourself and also give your affiliation and then your testimony.
Okay, my name is Andrew Crouch. I'm a member of the Matanuska Valley Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I'm a member of the Mat-Su Borough Fish and Wildlife Commission. I just wanted to speak for myself because those groups have not, we've taken some positions, but I am going to speak for myself here. And I wanted to talk to about both Mr. Kluberton and Mr. Webster. Did you want me to do that at separate times, or?
Yes, I'll separate these two, and I will limit your testimony to 2 minutes, please.
Okay, so talking about Mr. Kluberton, he, of course, comes from the Mat-Su Valley and is quite familiar with the situation we have up here. We have, I believe, 7 stocks of concern in the Mat-Su Valley, so we have not been getting escapement, and we're quite concerned about that, and we would certainly like to continue with a Board of Fisheries member that's been through the process and is familiar with the situation that we have up here. Mr. Kluberton certainly is interested in conservation of the resource. He certainly listens to all user groups, and I think that he certainly accepts the Department of Fish and Game's positions as the kind of a the best data available. But at the same time, I believe he's willing to challenge some of the Fish and Game information if there's some questionable biology there. So anyway, I would speak in favor of Mr. Kluberton, and that's, I guess, what I'd say for him.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, in Dillingham, Robert Hayano. Mr. Hayano, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Chair, this is Robert Hayano.
All right, if you would identify yourself with your affiliation and then 2 minutes of testimony, you wanted to speak to Mr. Kluberton, his appointment.
Yes, thank you. Pardon?
Yes, the appointment of Mr. Kluberton.
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Robert Iano, resident of Dillingham, Alaska, lifelong resident of Bristol Bay. I'm here to speak in favor of reappointment of Mr. Kluberton. I found him as a fish board member to be extremely accessible, not only to myself, but in my observation, other members of the public. I found him to be a board member who explains the reasons for his vote, and I think that although we don't always agree with their position, we understand or at least I understand the reason why he voted on certain issues. He's demonstrated some leadership qualities about him at the Board of Fish, and I think that's pretty noticeable as a first-term member. I think his ability to serve on the Cook Inlet Task Force this past winter speaks volumes of his commitment to the process and his willingness to tackle issues that are very contentious. So with that, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hayono. Let's see. Next in the Fairbanks LIO is Virgil Umphanur. You wish to testify on Mr. Kluberton's appointment?
Yes, ma'am. I have a new system here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you great.
Okay. My name is Virgil Umphanur. I live in North Pole. I'm the chairman of the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and I did serve 8 years on the Board of Fish. But anyway, our committee voted unanimously to support the reappointment of Tom Kluberton. We were very happy with his performance at the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim meeting. I did attend that meeting in its entirety, and he demonstrated what most Board of Fish members demonstrated, and that is that he did listen to the public, and he did pay attention to the science. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next we have in the Kenai LIO, Paul Shadura. Paul, can you hear us?
Yes, Senator Giesel. Good afternoon, Chairman Giesel, Vice Chair Dyson, Senate members of the Resource Committee. My name is Paul A. Shadura II. I'm resident of the Kenai Peninsula. Today I'm representing the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. Our organization has been representing commercial fishermen within the waters of Cook Inlet since 1954. At present, our members represent primarily commercial set net fishermen, although we also have members who represent the processing industry, drift fisheries suppliers, and the general public. The KPFA Board of Directors recently voted to support Governor Parnell's nominees for vacancies on the Alaska Board of Fisheries. We have worked with Tom Kluberton and find that he is approachable, respectful, and concerned about the sustainability of our state's fisheries resources. All of the board candidates expend the extra effort to listen to stakeholders and understand the complex science and to strive for a balance of opportunities for traditional harvesters, a feat that requires not only a concern for conservation, but also to maintain an abundant yield of fisheries resources so that all the citizens of the state can enjoy our resources. Exceptional to Mr. Kluberton was his extra effort in coming up with a Cook Inlet Task Force plan in October, and he co-chaired it, and he spent a lot of his time contacting task force members individually. He was available to them, and working with the Department of Fish and Game to bring forth science that all users hadn't seen, and to establish some basis for including the recommendation for the Department of Fish and Game's escapement goal for a contentious issue of the late Kenai River king salmon. So with that, I see my 2 minutes are up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shadura. Off net, we have Bruce Knowles. Mr. Knowles, I didn't know if you wanted to testify on Mr. Kluberton or just Mr. Webster.
No, I want to speak for Mr. Kluberton also.
All right, go ahead.
My name is Bruce Knowles. I live in Willow. I am the chairman of the Susitna Valley Advisory Committee, and I am chairman of the Matsu Borough Fish and Wildlife Committee. I will be speaking for myself today for Mr. Kluberton, and I worked with him for 3 years on the old fish, Borough Fisheries Group, and found him very astute, easy to work with, and he learned quite rapidly. And I think he's done a good job in the last 3 years, and I think he needs to stay around to do another job, great job for us in the upcoming 3 years. So I support his reappointment completely. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room or on the phone that wishes to testify on Mr. Kluberton's reappointment? Looks like no one, so we will close public testimony on his appointment. Thank you very much. Next, we have a second appointee, actually reappointee, to the Board of Fisheries, and that's Mr. Claude Vincent Webster. Mr. Webster, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Great. Welcome. You are up for reappointment, and so I would ask you to, if you would introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about why you wish to be reappointed. Maybe tell us a little bit about the challenges and rewards that you found in serving on the Board of Fish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, my full name's Claude Vincent Webster. Most people know me as Vince. I got actively involved in the process over 20 years ago through the Naknek-Quijack Advisory Committee. I served 15 years as chairman of that advisory committee. I've served the last 6 years on the Board of Fish itself. I got involved in the process basically to protect the resource. I feel honored that the governor's appointed me for a third term. I look forward to continuing to protect the resource, and I also believe in the process. I believe it's the best process in the world, and I want to protect the integrity of that also, Madam Chair.
Very good. Thank you. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Webster? All right. Oh, did you have one, Senator Machicki? Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Webster, Senator Machicki, just a kind of brief question similar to the one I asked Mr. Kluberton. Pretty contentious fisheries issues at times. Recent ones were in Cook Inlet. I'm not Cook Inlet focused, but it's a very good example of a place where folks like to disagree sometimes. Can you give me your take on how you can separate your long period or your long history of commercial fishing to make fair decisions between commercial and sport and personal use allocations and the decisions that go with those decisions, or the decisions that go with those issues?
Yes, we have a allocation criteria policy. It's been held up through the judicial system all the way to the Supreme Court. And it's a 7-point criteria. And when I take on allocation issues, which I believe to be the hardest thing to do on the board, I rely heavily on that, those 7 points, that criteria, and that's how I do it, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any follow-up questions, Senator Machicki?
No.
All right. Other members? Yes, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Webster, we've here on the Resources Committee have received quite a bit of correspondence about your reappointment, and I'm sure you're aware of that. Some in favor and some, frankly, against. And so I think it's incumbent upon me just to ask you a few questions about the nature of some of the questioning. And it centers around Cook Inlet, and it centers around the Kenai and the recent Board of Fish meeting in March, where you met in Anchorage March 19th through the 23rd, where a new escapement goal was set for Kenai River late-run king salmon. So I just take you back to that place in time and would like to just walk through with you the concern as it's been expressed to me. I myself am an avid fisherwoman, have been my whole life, and I love fishing on the Kenai River. And I have experienced over the last few years, along with many other Alaskans, the shortage of king salmon, the shortage of fish generally in the Susitna drainage and in our community. It's been devastating. I'm sure you know this and have been dealing with this, but in particular on the Kenai River, it's been a great concern, and certainly we have people come from all over the world and people in Alaska that go out to try and fish for these great Kenai kings. So the concern seems to center around the fact that an escapement goal was set originally at an amount that was between a range of 17,800 to 35,700, and then with a vote, it was changed to a new escapement goal of 15,000 to 30,000. So a drop then of 2,800 to 5,700, a change in allocation of approximately 6,000 late river, late run king salmon then that would be possibly reallocated through this new escapement goal, the new escapement goal being approximately 43% lower and the lowest escapement goal ever set in the Kenai River, this despite the fact that we are all very concerned, the most concerned we've ever been about the returns in the Kenai. And, of course, then the concern that that would then represent less kings going into the spawning beds, obviously. And I'll just wrap up the summary of that decision by saying that the concern that people have is that that allocation, you know, may have been irresponsible in light of managing the fisheries themselves and your duties on that board. And so I just ask if you could walk us through the decision that you made and led to reduce the escapement goal to an escapement goal that would represent the lowest escapement ever on the Kenai River for the late run king salmon at a time when Alaskans are looking to us as lawmakers and certainly looking to you on the Board of Fish to try and get these stocks back up.
Thank you. That's a very easy question. The board did not set the SEG escapement goal. The department is responsible for setting SEGs and BEGs, and the department decided they used all their scientific data to come up with the lower end of 15,000. They had that escape that SEG peer-reviewed by two members of their staff and one member of University of Fairbanks. And even the people that questioned it, there was a user group that had an independent scientist evaluate it. And when I asked him, was that 15,000 sustainable, every single scientist said, yes, that 15,000 was sustainable, even from the user groups that opposed it. So, but again, the Board of Fish did not set that. The department sets that. The Board of Fish only has the ability to set an OEG. It was never discussed for the board to set an OEG that would override the department's SEG. That may be taken up next year in cycle. We didn't bring that up at this meeting because we was out of cycle and we don't normally take on allocation out of cycle. So that's the easiest answer I got, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator McGuire?
Yes, I do have a couple of follow-ups. Thank you, Madam Chair. Isn't it true, though, that there were a couple of other options on the table that the board was considering rather than just simply adopting this lowest escapement goal? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. We had a winter-long meeting where Mr. Kluberdung and I co-chaired a committee, and the mission statement for that committee was to, as you know, the SetNet fishery was totally closed down last year, and the sport fishery, and Kenai suffered great economic damage. And so we, the board decided to have a task force where Mr. Kluberton and I co-chaired, but the mission statement for that committee was, that was approved by the board, was to come up with some solutions to basically allow some other way of fishing so before you have a total closure. It was, the mission statement was approved by the board. It wasn't taken upon Mr. Kluber and I to come up with our own mission statement. And that's what we held that committee or that task force to. We tried to come up, get the users to come up with a way to prevent total closure. And at the end, it was pretty clear from all users that they would rather have a total closure than to have a reduction of any type of fishing. So that's what the board approved at the end. Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator McGuire?
Yes, thank you very much. And so is it your opinion then, Mr. Webster, that your job, I guess, and I guess this just goes back to, your job as a commissioner and the Board of Fish, and I've served on boards and things, but I've never served on this board. So obviously, you have the opportunity to approve OEGs outside of the season, but when you are making these initial resource allocation issues in the spring and you're looking at escapement goals, is it your opinion then that you simply listen to the testimony from the department and if they say 15,000 is good, you just adopt that?
Through the sustainable salmon fishery policy, as I stated, the department has the authority, the sole authority, to set SEGs and BEGs. And the board can override that with an OEG. And, I suppose because there really wasn't any notice to the public for setting an OEG, and that's part of the process. You know, we don't like doing something outside. It may not even hold up in the court of law if we don't give public notice. So, as I've stated, an OEG may, and I'm sure it will be considered next year in cycle when we have a full-blown Cook Inlet meeting. This, as I stated, was the task force had a mission goal, mission statement that was very narrow. We did not want a full-blown cook inlet meeting, and that's why, because it was out of cycle, we held it very tight to what the mission statement said, Madam Chair.
Follow-up question?
My last question, then, would you agree with this statement, last question for you, that it was acknowledged by the department staff during their presentation that there was no brood year return data to support a sustainable escapement goal of less than 24,000?
I don't remember everything that was stated in the presentation. I do recall some questions about the way they set their escapement goal. You know, it's based on historical data, and I believe you're right. There's no they carried the Richter scale on down to there's no lower end of escapement on the data points. So there isn't there. You're right. There's no data points to know exactly what the threshold of the lower end is. But that's because the Kenai's never totally crashed. That's actually a good thing that they don't have any data points on that low end, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Webster, for answering the questions. There's a question now from Senator French.
More an inquiry for you, Madam Chair, or maybe for Senator McGuire. I just, with my committee materials, I got the three-page online application that Mr. Webster filled out. I didn't get a stack of materials for and against Mr. Webster, and didn't know if those came through the committee or maybe just to Senator McGuire's office.
They did not come through the committee. We had one letter that was in support of both of these appointees, but I had no other correspondence.
That's my only question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. But I do have several folks signed up to testify on this appointment. So if there are no other questions for Mr. Webster, we'll open public testimony. I'll start here in the room. Ricky Geese has signed up to testify. Mr. Geese, if you want to come forward. And then from there, we'll go to the Kenai LIO, and Paul Shadura will be on right after Mr. Geese. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, members of the committee, Madam Chair. My name is Ricky Geese. I'm the executive director of the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. Kenai River Sport Fishing Association opposes the reappointment of Vince Webster to the Alaska Board of Fisheries, a step that we do not take lightly. The Alaska Legislature has delegated to the Board of Fisheries the primary responsibility for the conservation of fishery resources in the state and harvest allocations of surplus fish to user groups. When the actions by the Board of Fish undermine public confidence in its primary responsibility for fishery conservation, it is incumbent upon the Alaska Legislature to restore confidence in the board process through its oversight responsibility and the confirmation of board members. Our opposition is not based on having commercial-oriented representatives on the Board of Fisheries. We support having a balanced representation on the Board of Fisheries from various user groups and from geographical areas in the state. Instead, our opposition is based squarely on the public perception that the Board of Fish, in the face of historic low returns of the iconic king salmon to the Kenai River, recently accepted a questionable fish and game recommendation to lower the Kenai King escapement goal, took no other action such as establishing an OEG higher than that, and took no other action to amend failed management plans. The bottom line, the board was led in this discussion in the decision-making process for Kenai Kings by the Bristol Bay representative to the board, Mr. Webster, who directed and guided the discussion and drafting of documents of the RCs at the Board of Fish meeting, and pushed hard for whatever gave the commercial set net fishery the best chance to get back in the water for an unrestricted 2013 fishing season that took precedence over rigorous science, fairness, or economics. In relation to the warning flags issued by the independent reviewers regarding the department, we've heard through questioning through the senator that two-thirds of the escapement goal was below the known range of historical data, that lowering the goal came with greater risks of overfishing to the stocks, and the main beneficiary would come, the commercial set net would come at the expense of the fishery resource. Such an agenda trumps the priority for fishery conservation and abdicates the board's responsibility to put fish ahead of the financial considerations of any particular user group. Board members are to be independent evaluators in the board process who act to safeguard the public resource, question and probe the department to make sure that the best available science is being discussed and debated, and not to act as a rubber stamp for the interests of one user group or the department itself. On the Kenai, by means we are not out of the woods. The 2013 run is predicted to be equal to the smallest run on record. By taking no other action than lowering the escapement goal in order to provide the commercial fishing opportunity, it leaves the department managers with the same management plans that so dramatically failed to provide the best mix of fishing opportunity and best means of achieving the escapement objective in 2012. We had a colossal failure in Cook Inlet. It costs our community more than $30 million. And what's going to happen? The department will find itself back in the business of picking winners and losers amongst competing fisheries without any direction from this board. We ask for better leadership from the board, and especially from Mr. Webster, to protect and conserve our fisheries resources, and then and only then to allocate the harvestable surplus in a fair and equitable manner to all user groups. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Geese. Senator French.
Just one. Thank you, Madam Chair. What was the vote? What was the Board of Fish vote on lowering that escapement?
The board, it was kind of a cumbersome process. They had taken two different RCs up at two different times. Then when it became apparent that after almost close to 2 days of arguing and discussing this, they bifurcated the decision. They decided to accept the 15 to 30,000, but they took no other management action other than that. So they basically punted and left the decision in the board, in the department's hands of how best to manage the fishery.
But just as a follow-up, yes. Just on the setting of that escapement level, was it unanimous or was it a split board?
No, they decided to accept the recommendation from the department.
Unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions from committee members? Thank you, Mr. Geese. Next up, then, is Paul Shadura. He is in the Kenai LIO. Mr. Shadura?
Thank you, Chairman Geisel, and thank you, members of the Resource Committee. Again, my name is Paul Shadura. I'm a resident of the Kenai Peninsula, and I am representing the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. Since you've already heard my presentation for Mr. Kluberton, I'll cut right to Mr. Webster. Mr. Webster has been on the board for two terms. He's done an excellent job among all the users within the whole state, speaking to different fishermen around the state, commercial fishermen and other users. They're always complex and they're always different. And there are always those that feel that they didn't get what they particularly wanted. Our position for this last statewide meeting in Mr. Kluberton's job, that was a 7-0 vote to support the Department of Fish and Game. That did not mean that other users, such as Kenai Peninsula Fishermen Set Netters, actually appreciated. We had other issues on the table, on other options that we would have liked to have discussed. But at the end, the compromise between what the department wanted and what we wanted and what seemingly the public agreed to was to support the department and its efforts to solidify the county methods and the management. I think it's important to note that when we changed from the previous counting system, which was a split beam Bendix, it was an altogether different type of metrics. And then when we went to the Ditson system, we changed to a new counting method. It's similar to using the metric system versus the English system of inches and feet. And that is that in all technical explanation, to make it simple, the same escapement goal that was used for the previous Bendix, which tended to overcount the fish, king salmon entering the Kenai River, has been scaled back and corrected to the new Ditson mixture model system that we currently are using. In all intents and purposes, again, the same lower bound escapement goal, which is now SEG, is in place. In fact, the Ricker curves and all the modeling using the corrective factors all the way back to 1986 showed that you could have an escapement of 13,000 to 28 and still return the same yield of 30,000. Anything over that 28,000, the harvest would be foregone within the river and outside of the river. It's not a question that we are under escaping the Kenai. In fact, in many reasons why we're having these declines, there's good science to show that we, in fact, overscape those years.
Mr. Shadura?
5 years ago. Yes?
Mr. Shadura, back to the appointee, Mr. Webster.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. So, Mr. Webster, I guess, was just wanted to be very clear, since I heard the other respondents talk about issues maybe not relative just to Mr. Webster, I wanted to make sure that all resource members did have a different view of Mr. Webster's activities and his performance. Mr. Webster did an excellent job. We appreciate his efforts. We don't always agree with them, but it's nice to have members that are willing to sacrifice and continue on the board and have the knowledge to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shadura. Next in Fairbanks, we have Virgil Umphanour. Mr. Umphanour?
Hello, Madam Chair. My name is Virgil Umphanour. I'm speaking on behalf of myself right now. I've known Vince Webster for at least 20 years, worked with him when I was on the Board of Fish and he was chairman of the NACNAC-Quijac Advisory Committee. But I do support Vince's reappointment. I wrote a letter when he was originally appointed by the governor 6 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next in the Dillingham LIO is Robert Hayano. Mr. Hayano, are you there? Okay. All right. He may have signed off. We'll go then to the Matt Sue, and Andrew Couch is there. Mr. Couch?
Yes, this is Andrew Couch again. I'm representing myself, talking to Mr. Webster's qualifications. Mr. Webster has struck me as conservation-minded. He certainly is approachable to all user groups. I'm kind of a sport fishing interest guy. I'm a guide myself, but of the people that seem to be representing commercial interests on the board, the commercial fishermen, Mr. Webster has certainly been the most approachable for me. I feel like he understands what I'm talking about. Certainly, he doesn't always vote the way I would want him to for my own interests. I think at times Mr. Webster accepts the Department of Fish and Game commercial position as kind of the truth especially when there might be a conflict with the sport position, even if it's the department's sport position. But Mr. Webster is certainly a commercial user there, and that's kind of understandable. By and large, I would say that I would like to see Mr. Webster and his knowledge of the different fisheries around the state, I would like to see it continue for another 3-year term. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. The last person signed up is Bruce Knowles. He's in the off-net. Mr. Knowles, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, I'm Bruce Knowles, and I spoke earlier. I'm speaking in opposition to Mr. Webster. To me, I think he has let the state down in the management of our resources. We all that serve on committees and have an obligation to our Constitution to protect our resources. Currently in the Northern District of Cook Inlet, we have 6 king salmon stocks that are stocks of concern. One sockeye salmon that has a stock of concern. And we just found out recently that there will be 4 additional king salmon streams that have qualified for stock of concern and possibly 1 to 2 coho streams. So that means that in the state we have the majority of all stock of concerns. And I have found that Mr. Webster strongly supports commercial fishing interests.
he led the charge in, I think it was 2008, to add three additional periods to the commercial fishing time for Northern District set netters. And this was on stocks that were already on the edge of a stock of concern. And I have seen that he has not supported the addition to stocks of concerns. We tried to get the Lotus Susitna Coho treated as an agenda change request last summer, and he voted against it, and it did fall through and miss its escapement goal, and it is now qualified with 4 years of missed stocks. So I find that Mr. Webster is not supportive of in-stream management, especially in the Northern District, since it's at the end of the funnel. And when you look, you have the Yukon River that has problems with their returns. You have the Kuskokwim and all. And when you have stocks that head way up the rivers, these stocks are not being managed for sustainability, I don't believe. And I think that Mr. Webster has caused a lot of problems of our issues here in Cook Inlet. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm told that Mr. Hayano from Dillingham is back on the line. Are you there, Mr. Hayano? Can you hear us?
I'd like to speak in favor of the reappointment of Vince Webster. At this time, I'd like to incorporate all my previous comments on Mr. Cruperton, which I believe are qualities that make up a good board member. In addition, I personally know Mr. Webster, and during his 15-year tenure as a Naknek-Quijack AC, I had the opportunity of chairing the Nishigak AC, so I have a strong background with Mr. Webster in working on Bristol Bay issues. The Vince Webster, I know, has a very strong commitment to the conservation of the resources. And, I know that him and his immediate family have set net sites in the Quijack. And we've had the Quijack River was listed as a SOC. I was listed as a stock of concern for numerous years. And Mr. Webster's unwavering support of maintaining the integrity of the escapement as a direct result is personal loss in finances and his family due to the lack of fishing in the Quijack, I think, speaks volumes to his strong commitment. So I guess what point I'm trying to make is the Vince Webster I know has made that personal sacrifice, financial sacrifice to him and his family for the preservation of conservation, not only as a Naknek-Quijack AC member, but also as his two-term Board of Fish member. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hayano, for your testimony. Is there anyone further in the room or on the phone that wishes to testify on Mr. Webster's reappointment? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. That concludes the hearing on these two Board of Fisheries appointees. At this time, I will read the committee report. In accordance with AS 3905080, the Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Board of Fisheries, Thomas Cliverton, Talkeetna, Vince Webster, King Salmon. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. So at this point, we'll take a brief at ease and sign this transmittal document, and then we'll come back on the record to hear the appointee for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Come back on the record. We have the governor's appointment to the Big Game Commercial Services Board next. The gentleman's name is Henry Tiffany IV. Committee members, in your packet, you will have, I believe, a letter from Mr. Tiffany, and then I have also provided you with a copy of his previous application. After the hearing today, if you would return this document to my staff, it contains some contact information which should have been redacted. Mr. Tiffany, are you on the line?
I am. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome. If you would introduce yourself, tell us about any affiliations, experience, reasons for your interest in this appointment.
It would be my pleasure, Madam Chair and Senators. Thank you for your time. Again, my name is Henry D. Tiffany IV. My father does reside in Alaska and other places, so there are two of us roaming around. But I'm a third-generation Alaskan with deep roots that lives in Fairbanks and has for many years. My grandfather, Edward Fortier, served on the first guide board that was established in Alaska, and as editor of Alaska Sportsman, which later then became Alaska Magazine, he knew many of the original old-time guides in Alaska, so we have a long connection with the guiding industry, though I am the first in our family to be a licensed big game guide. I was fortunate to discover the guiding profession early in my life, and I do count myself quite fortunate. I know some people may go through their entire lives without finding their passion, and I am pleased to say I'm not one of them. And this will be my 25th year as a professional guide here in Alaska, and it's my hope to continue that profession for long into the future. I'd be honored to serve at the governor's pleasure on the Big Game Commercial Services Board to give back in small measure to a profession and an industry and a way of life that has meant so much to me, continues to mean so much to me, and that I remain very passionate and supportive of even after almost 25 years in the business. I'm concerned about the industry as a whole and the resources, the land and the animals. There are some real issues facing us in this state and in the guiding industry, particularly the overcrowding of guides on state land and some transporter issues that I believe will need to be addressed in the near term. I'd like to see this profession and the industry and the way of life that means so much to me available and a viable option for my children and all future generations. But that takes work. And I believe that if it's the governor's pleasure and the Senate and the House's, that it's my turn to give back and help steward the guiding industry into the hands of future generations. I've hunted and guided throughout all the major regions of Alaska. My primary areas of expertise are the interior, the Brooks Range and the Alaska Peninsula, and I also have concentrated experience in Southeast, Southwest, and Kodiak Island. I remain a very involved and hands-on guide and continue to personally guide hunters throughout the season. That frankly is the fun part, being out in the field with someone, dealing with the paperwork and the business side of it. Is a very necessary part that must be handled correctly, but the reward comes from being out in the field, and I've had the pleasure of guiding many non-residents and many residents, and watching them fulfill a dream is quite a thing that I'm honored to be able to do and to share our state with people. Having guided throughout Alaska and working though primarily as the guide and outfitter in charge, I've also worked for other guides, and I think that gives me a broad background of experience in most all aspects of the guiding industry and the use of air taxis and transporters. I try to maintain a broad, big-picture view of our industry and what it would or could be, and what is best for the whole. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the best for me or those that I know well, but one needs to look outside of their own selfishness to what is best for the state, for the resources, and for the longevity of one of the oldest professions in Alaska. I've served on Big Game Commercial Services Board subcommittees. I have been a proctor for the guide exams for many years and been a very active and involved participant in the Big Game Commercial Services Board meetings since it was reestablished after it had been sunsetted. I'm chairman of the rural services area where I live, here north of Fairbanks on Murphy Dome. And if it's your pleasure and that of the governor's, it would be an honor to again give back to a way of life that continues to mean so much to me. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Tiffany. Questions from committee members for Mr. Tiffany? Yes, Senator French.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mr. Tiffany, thanks for your willingness to step forward and serve. You submitted a very thorough application package with letters and references. It's all very impressive. I just have one question, and that's about, and I really appreciate you sort of coming up front with a few times you've been touched by the court system. You mentioned a small claims case and a client who wanted the full refund of his hunt back. What happened with that case? How did that get resolved?
Thank you, Senator, for your question. The only time, to my knowledge, that I've had a disgruntled client, this was an individual. His sheep hunt with me was his third sheep hunt. At the time of this particular hunt, I figured it out. It was my 33rd sheep hunt. But this was a person who unfortunately came to the adventure and to the hunt with the distinct attitude that he had forgotten more about hunting sheep and Alaska than I may have ever known, which I continually learn every day I'm out there. That is one of the great beauties of this profession is though I hold a master guide license, no one will ever be a master. You're constantly learning. Things are constantly changing. But I do think it's fair to say that my 33 sheep hunts compared to his three did perhaps give me a few more insights. And I recall him saying to the other hunter that we had during that hunt in camp on the first night of the hunt, we were outside the tents, one of my guides and I, and he voiced his frustration to the other hunter, a broad frustration that and I believe this is pretty close to a direct quote, "the only time I ever hire a guide is when I absolutely have to because I don't really need them," end quote. So that really wasn't the greatest footing to start 10 days together in remote Alaska. Needless to say, he had very specific expectations of the kind of quality sheep he wanted, expectations that I supported. He had killed I believe one doll ram previous to that, and he was looking for one bigger, which I commend and commended at the time. Throughout the hunt, we did not we saw one ram that was comparable, none that I judged to be much superior to what he harvested. The final, I believe, day of the hunt, we did make a stalk on what's referred to as a double-boomed ram. We couldn't get any closer than 400 yards. Under those conditions, that I did not feel was an ethical good opportunity, so we passed. And at the end of the conclusion of the hunt, he told me he wanted a full refund of his hunt because he didn't get a sheep. Well, I said that's not possible. The resources that you provided me have been committed to the air taxis, the food that you've eaten, the people that have helped support this hunt. I said, if you're interested, I will offer you a hunt at a deep discount next year. I can tell you that I won't personally guide you because this has been the most unpleasant 10 days of my entire career. But my other guides are very good and very qualified. And that's how we left it. He flew back to the lower 48 and then subsequently filed a small claims case against me, my first and only, and to try to get the recoup his cost for the hunt. Because I like to think that in any situation, if I do something wrong, I will stand up and take responsibility for that. In this case, I did nothing wrong. We didn't get the sheep he wanted. That's why it's called hunting and not killing. And I wouldn't be in this business if it was always a guarantee. So I actually hired an attorney because I absolutely refused to pay a small claims case because that seemed to be admitting guilt when there was none there, in my opinion. So I hired an attorney, and I requested that this go to trial. I wanted both sides of the story to be heard in front of my peers as Alaska residents. And the long and the short of it is this gentleman dragged his feet and did not really want to go through with it, to the point that and I apologize, I don't remember the judge's name, but the judge was becoming very frustrated with the plaintiff and almost, I think, held him in contempt of court because of the games he was playing. So nothing ever came of it. I did help support my local economy in attorney's fees, but I felt that it was the right thing to do because I really, truly felt there was no wrong done, and if he wanted to pursue it, then the court of law would have been the appropriate way to do that.
Follow-up, Senator French?
No, thank you, Mr. Tiffany. I just misunderstood because you had two court cases listed here. I thought they were two separate cases. Instead, I can see they're one now through your explanation, and you won hands down. So that was a good explanation. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and open public testimony. I have five people who are signed up to testify. This committee does adjourn at 5 p.m., so I'm going to ask folks to limit their comments to 2 minutes, please. So we'll start out with Kelly Rem in Chugiak. Kelly, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. If you would introduce yourself, share your affiliation, and then 2 minutes of testimony.
Yes, my name is Kelly Rem. I'm a resident of Sutton. And I have a business here in Chugiak as well, an airplane hangar. I'm currently the chairman of the Big Game Commercial Services Board. I'm a registered master guide and been guiding since 1973. Henry's will be an asset to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. He's one of those folks that shows up at every meeting. He's a willing participant and happily accepts any assignments that the board chair has asked him to do over the years. I've been basically a public participant until 2 years ago, along with Henry, and like you say, he's always one of the folks that shows up. The governor, I know, had several people to choose from. Henry percolated to the top, and I think that shows a good deal about Henry's character and his expertise, and I'd be happy to serve with him. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vrem. Next is Richard Rohrer. Mr. Rohrer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dick Rohrer. I'm a guide from Kodiak. Been involved in the industry really since 1965 and just completed recently serving two terms on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. I'm here to support Mr. Tiffany's appointment to the board, and rather than repeat what's already been said, I concur with Chairman Vrem. Those have been my observations of Mr. Tiffany through the years I've served on the board, and encourage him to be confirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Kronberger, Lance Kronberger, has signed off. Okay, so he's not.
He might come back.
Next is Virgil Umphenor in Fairbanks. Mr. Umphenor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Virgil Umphenor. I'm also a big game guide, like other previous speakers. And I've known Henry for quite some time. We attend meetings together, and like you said, when he's talking about why he wanted to be on the board. We've set and test proctored. That's testing people that want to become guides. We've done that together. In fact, we did that together last month. But Henry will be, I think, a very good asset to the board. And I'd like to say that he's what I refer to as a fair chase guide, which means he's a guy that walks around out there on the ground. And I think it's good to have guides that actually get out there and guide and are not just administrators. He still guides just like I do. And so I strongly recommend his confirmation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Then here it looks like at the LIO in Kodiak, I have Sam Rohrer. Are you there, Sam?
Yes, I am. Welcome. Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Sam Rohrer. I'm a registered hunting guide, and I'm representing myself. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of Henry Tiffany's appointment to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. I agree with the rest of the testimony that's gone ahead of me, but I'd just like to say I do support Mr. Tiffany's appointment to the board. I have worked with him as well on guide issues in the past on subcommittees for the Commercial Services Board. He is thoughtful, articulate, and without a doubt will always have the future of the guiding industry foremost on his mind. And so for these reasons, I support Mr. Tiffany's appointment. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'll check once more. Is Lance Kronberger online? He is not. Okay. So let me ask, is there anyone else online or in the room that would like to speak to this testimony, or excuse me, to this appointee? Yes, come forward. Welcome, Thor. If you would identify yourself.
Yes. My name is Thor Stacy. I represent the Alaska Professional Hunters Association as their lobbyist, and I'm here to testify in support of Mr. Tiffany's appointment. First off, I thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for giving me some brief time here to support him. The Alaska Professional Hunters Association averages about 120 professional members. Professional members are registered or master hunting guides here in the state. In 2012, there was 303 guides, registered guides that signed contracts here in the state or conducted hunts. So we represent a fair portion of the of guide businesses here in the state. We have a high standard of professionalism relating to issues like Mr. Tiffany talked about with a client that expected to have an animal. We have to buy a hunt, and therefore you harvest an animal that's illegal in the state of Alaska. You cannot contract sell a hunt with the expectation of harvest. What Mr. Tiffany did as far as doing his best to bring someone back in a fair chase climate, those are things that as professionals we find to be very high standards. So Mr. Tiffany has high standards of professionalism. He's attended, I believe, every single commercial services board meeting. He has an excellent working knowledge of regulation and statute, and he's well educated. He has a good background in Robert's Rules of Order. We think that he'll bring good integrity to the board process, and his seat's important. There's two guide seats on the Commercial Services Board. There's general public, private landowner, but his is one of the two guide seats. So within our group and within guides, we kind of didn't weigh in too much on which guide we recommended or asked the governor to appoint. We wanted to wait and see who floated to the top, and we would support that. We would support that appointment as long as someone with good professional standards, and we think that Mr. Tiffany embodies those qualities. So for those reasons, the Alaska Professional Hunters Association supports Henry Tiffany's appointment.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Stacy. Any questions for Mr. Stacy? All right. Very good. Anyone else wishing to testify on Mr. Tiffany's appointment? Seeing no one, we'll close public testimony. In accordance with AS 3905080, the Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointment be forwarded to the joint session for consideration.
Madam Chair, I have to raise a point of order. How can we do this with three people?
Because before he left, Senator Machicki did sign the confirmation or the forwarding. Big Game Commercial Services Board, Henry Tiffany IV. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. After that document is signed, the meeting will be adjourned. We do have a meeting noticed for tomorrow afternoon at 3:30. We are anticipating the potential of a bill being forwarded to the Senate Resources Committee, which we will take up under bills previously heard or scheduled. So my staff will remain in contact with all committee members. So at this time, the meeting is adjourned. The time is 4:54 p.m.